The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
New figures released show that only one third of people accused of sexual offences in the last 10 years were prosecuted. Often the reason given for a case not being brought forward is a lack of evidence, and we're going to examine why these cases are not prosecuted and how it affects victims. Joining me now to do just that is human rights lawyer Nolene Blackwell, sexual assault survivor and activist Hazel Behan, and News Talk's own Jessica Woodlock. Jessica, I'm going to start with you because you got these figures from Freedom of Information, I think it is. Maybe take us through what the figures tell us.
That's right, Mandy. So News Talk received this data on the DPP's prosecutions over a 10-year period. So between 2014 and 2024, we revealed today that the Gardaí gave 17,662 sexual offence files to the DPP. Now, Mandy, from these cases, there was a staggering amount of suspects involved. So over 19,600 suspects altogether. And of these cases, the DPP prosecuted just 6,253 people. So that's just over 30% of suspects.
Yeah, extraordinary figures. I'm going to bring Nolene Blackwell in here because you've been dealing with this issue for many, many years. What did you make of those figures that were released today?
I totally understand why it sounds like an odd number, but it is something that is a frustration. And I'm sure just even listening to Kira Mangan on the headlines, just the frustration where people get to the DPP's office and a case isn't taken forward. Because the truth is, and actually, I suspect that, you know, if we track this over time, it's very important to have these figures, because I suspect that actually files coming from the Gardaí are getting better year on year. Like in 2014, when this started, there wasn't really an effective unit just dealing with sexual offences and domestic violence and those particular types of intimate crimes. In more recent years, there have been. But even at that, where a victim has to go and make their report to the Gardaí and the Gardaí investigate it, that's a very careful process. So then when it goes to the DPP, there's this whole new sort of area of anxiety. Will the DPP take it on? And so often people are really flummoxed and frustrated when the Gardaí have put forward a file that they believe is worthy of prosecution and the DPP doesn't take it on because they say that the evidence isn't strong enough, that some of the evidence won't stand up in court, because the DPP have to be satisfied in the public interest that the evidence is strong enough, that the case will, that if the case goes forward, there's a really good chance that there will be a conviction out of it, and that evidence won't be set aside. So in some ways, they are looking at the evidence itself. Is it too old? Is there enough of it? Is the victim going to be able to tell the court in a way that the jury will believe them? And the jury then has to believe it beyond all reasonable doubt. So there's a different process there. But the thing about the DPP's office as well is that actually they're totally independent in their function. And while people can ask them for the reasons why they're not prosecuting, those reasons tend to be sort of broad and a little bit vague, you know. So the DPP will always say, it's not that we don't believe you, it's just that we don't believe that this is a case that will make it all the way through. And that sort of sense, they do definitely always say, it's not that we don't believe you, but it's very hard for a victim who's been through the Garda investigation not to feel that they're not being believed. But it's a decision they have to make. And there's kind of an element of magic about it in some ways, because we don't know, because it's not a mathematical formula. It is a decision that a prosecutor has to make.
And Jessica, can I ask you, you obviously went back to the DPP when you got these figures. What reason did they give you for these numbers being as they are, for not going forward with roughly 70% of the prosecutions?
So as Nolene mentioned, they do say that the case needs to be able to be proved beyond reasonable doubt. So when we asked the DPP's office about this, they pointed us in the direction of prosecution guidelines. So this talks about things like what is actually admissible in court on the day, what is allowed be said and shown, and also evidence they said is based on reliability and how much of it is there. It is important to say, though, that in a lot of these cases, they don't actually know what the suspect, what some of the key witnesses will actually say until they do get to trial, until they do get to court. So it's on paper they're sort of making this decision. And the only time that that is different is actually for children. Children, their first statement is taken up to the age of 18. And so they know they have that child statement going into the prosecution and going into the decision on whether that takes to court. But for everyone else, they don't have those key statements.
Mm. As Nolene said there, the DPP's office, their ultimate objective is to bring forward prosecutions that they think they can get a conviction on. And things are changing there in terms of what they can use. And we'll come back and talk about that in a minute. But I think it's an important time to talk to Hazel about. Hazel Behan, who's an activist and sexual assault survivor, is joining me on the line now. Hazel, you know, you're somebody, when we're talking about these statistics, it can seem very clinical and insensitive. You're somebody who has actually been a victim of this system as well as everything else. Maybe before we talk to you about how these type of procedures affect someone like you, you'd share with us a little bit of what happened to you.
Yeah, of course. I look at behind every statistic as a person, you know, and that person is, you know, a survivor, I would say, of the most horrendous crime that could be committed against another human being. And, you know, we always have to be mindful of the fact that reporting something as personal to the Gardaí, to anybody, takes huge strength. It's genuinely not an easy thing to do. So, you know, from my experience, and obviously my experience didn't happen in Ireland, but the system is very similar across Europe. When I did report about the crimes that were committed against me, I just plainly wasn't believed, and I wasn't treated very well, which has since, all these years later, led to me taking a case to the European Court of Human Rights against the Portuguese state. I've also been through the whole trial process and the German version of the DPP. So I know what it's like to be on the receiving end and be one of them statistics. Just to point out as well, while we are talking about statistics, the maths that I've done, I'm not a mathematician at all, but it works out like that there's a 1.10% conviction rate over that 10-year period. It just doesn't lend for people to actually feel it's worth everything that you've to give up. And everything, all the efforts and the time and your life that you have to give up, actually report a crime like this when the conviction rate is so little and so lenient. There's times where I've sat back and wondered why the hell I done it, to be quite honest.
Yeah, and I know you're progressing your own particular case in the European Court of Justice at the moment. Mm-hmm. That must be in itself a completely, an absolutely unbelievable process to have to go through.
When you're going through any process, whether it's, you know, the beginning when you meet the Gardaí, when you're giving statements, it's all very intrusive. You need to actually go back to the time or to the times that things happened. And as you can probably imagine, that in itself is deeply traumatic. So having to have to go through that, to be one of the quote-unquote lucky people to actually make it to court and to have your testimony heard at trial, albeit as a witness to a crime, which the use of legal language is very demeaning, I think, to victims of crimes. We're called witnesses in the court, that as a witness to a crime, and give your testimony, for it to be essentially, you know, you're put on the spot, your life is pulled apart. Every aspect of who you are as a person is pulled apart piece by piece. And it really feels as if your job is not to prove that this person is guilty, but to prove that you aren't, mm-hmm. that you haven't done anything wrong. And look, again, I'm not here speaking as a professional per se. I'm here speaking as a victim of a crime. But I can only say how I feel and how I felt during that process. I do have an appeal pending, which again puts a definite comma on your life. Everything is on hold. And I think it's worthwhile saying to people who are listening in that, you know, this is not just a case that you're reading in a newspaper or listening to on a news show. For a person who has gone through all this, this is their life. This is their whole world. And everything that's happening there is going, you know, on in their world day in, day out for sometimes years. I know in my case, it's gone into the sixth year now. So it's grueling and deeply traumatic.
Do you think that when a victim or a survivor hears statistics like this, that it can prevent people from being brave and coming forward?
Absolutely. And just to say, I mean, bravery is not necessary. Everyone has their own way and their own path through how they deal with things after a traumatic event such as rape or sexual violence. So, you know, strength can be just speaking to a counsellor or speaking to a friend or actually, you know, doing your own, finding your own pathway to healing. So, but if you do, as a survivor, your ears will prick up when you hear another story. That's just, you know, without a shadow of a doubt. And you're going to be interested in what that has to say and how things progress in that case. So the lenient sentencing, the use of your counselling notes at trial, the use of legal language, you know, witness versus victim. And then when you encounter, unfortunately at times, and I've spoken to many other people who've encountered Gardaí who are fantastic people, wonderful at doing their job, but just aren't properly trained to deal with victims of sexual violence. So I think it's like a cocktail of things that are missing, that are lacking in the system as a whole, that don't encourage victims to come forward. Because of everything that they will need to actually give up again. You know, you have to remember you're dealing with somebody who has literally been stripped back to bare bones. They are extremely vulnerable and are dealing with, you know, a whole host of different things, potentially PTSD, mental health issues, anxiety, all the list of things that can come after such a horrendous attack.
Yeah.
And then to actually present themselves, somebody else, to a stranger effectively, and hand that over to them, you know, and allow for them to hopefully investigate and find, you know, bring the person who caused it to justice. That is a phenomenal thing for somebody else. You know, I think it's just the system on it as a whole is lacking, if I'm being totally honest.
Jessica, just to go back for a little bit to the explanations around these figures in particular, beyond the burden of proof and evidence, is there any other practical explanation for why the numbers are as low as they are?
So recently, in recent years, it is a requirement that the DPP's office do have to provide reasons. But as we've been discussing and as yourself and Hazel mentioned, the overwhelming reason is insufficient evidence. And it's my understanding that that's really all people are told. They're not told about the strength of a certain piece of evidence or another piece or a witness or anything
like
that.
And is there new ways and like are the numbers, I know they're bad, but have they, are they getting better? Like, are there new things that are happening, like legislation and social media that helps cases maybe?
Yes. So there is one positive to take from it, and that is that the cases that are being prosecuted, more are being prosecuted now than 10 years ago. So some people might not take too much comfort from that. But to sort of spell that out to people, back in 2014, 80% of cases that were given to the DPP by the Gardaí, so sexual offence cases, were not prosecuted. So just 20% were. But now this has dropped. So it reached a low of 56% in 2022. And the latest figures we have for last year is in and around 60%. So some people might not take comfort from that, but it is rising and it is slowly but surely getting better over the years.
Nolene, listening to Hazel speaking her truth there about what it is like for a victim and Jessica's figures, I'm just trying to find a way of some kind of positivity in this to maybe give people hope that if they have suffered in some way and they're thinking about coming forward, that it's hard. It must be tremendously difficult. And Hazel, I think, has articulated how difficult that can be. What could you say to somebody who's listening in, struggling with that decision now?
She is absolutely great, Hazel is, and she has articulated very well the level of effort, the level of courage, the level of sort of sheer stamina and stick-at-itness that you need in cases like these. But certainly my experience of those who have experienced sexual violence and who survived it is some of them will want to take their case forward. They will want justice. They will want it to be recognised that a crime was done against them. There are others who will wait for a long time, actually, before they get to that point, but they will want that as well. And then there are others still who will say, I don't want that person to commit crimes against anybody else. Mm. And so they do it actually for the public good. And I think that point that Jessica makes there at the end is kind of, it's not exactly a beam of light, but it's a trickle of light coming through. It is true to say that actually the truth is that actually those who were victims of rape and other sexual offences, mainly women, were blamed for it in our court system, in our legal system, not just for decades, for hundreds of years. It was the fault of the person who carried out who was the victim of the rape or other sexual offence, unless it was one of those cases where it was really obvious that it couldn't have been that. So for the most part, the legal system took the view that really the victim of the crime couldn't be right. It is now moving forward. It is really only in the past five years or so that we've had any rights for victims in our law at all. So even that, to say that there are, that victims have some rights, not a lot, but they have some, and it is growing. It is also true that both the Director of Public Prosecutions and the Gardaí are receiving much more training, as indeed are the judiciary and some barristers, are receiving training and understanding the impact of trauma on a victim, the impact on memory, and they are collecting. If they do that, they collect better evidence, they give better files to the DPP from the guards, the DPP have a better understanding of how to deal with them. So that is also our experience, is that that over time, the slow progress is being made. Sentencing for rape is increasing over the last number of years, although the data on it isn't good enough. So there are small advances being made along the way. I think one of the things that certainly can be said with confidence is that every single Garda division now has a specialist unit dealing with serious sexual offences and domestic violence. All these cases, of course, are serious, but the ones attracting the bigger sentences, there are specialist units for them there. They are better trained, they're more understanding, and they're better at collecting evidence. So these things are moving forward, but the trouble is that it is far too slow, and there is still that sense that the legal system is between the prosecutor, the DPP, and the accused and their legal team. And that, to make that point, it's a very lonely place that Hazel spoke about, where you are the witness and where you feel that it isn't a prosecution against the accused. It's actually an examination of your life and your behaviour. And so that still needs to go further. It is changing, shifting slowly. I don't know, is that any consolation even to Hazel? But it's people like her explaining the difficult position they're being put in is making a difference. More people are coming forward. Cases are being better prepared. There's a little bit more of cases. More of them are winning.
Yes, I know what you mean. It's the percentage of that are going through that there more of them are being successful. Hazel, if I can leave the final brief word to you on this one. One of the issues Nolene mentioned there is that society has changed in terms of their perspective of the victim. Do you feel that? Do you feel that support is there more for victims and for survivors now than it was maybe, say, 5 years ago, as Nolene has mentioned?
Look, I think the stigma surrounding rape and sexual violence has certainly moved forward. You know, it's sometimes it's changed. I think we live in still very much a misogynistic culture, unfortunately, where, as I said before, it's up to the victim, mainly a female, to prove that this person did it to them, do you know? And in doing that, they have to kind of give themselves over again in so many different ways to the person they believe is the perpetrator of a crime. Just to say, you know, it shouldn't take for women like myself and like so many others who have had to make so much noise to be heard in the hope of helping others get the help that they deserve. And to anyone else who's listening out there at the moment, you don't have to be loud and make noise to be strong. You know, there is strength in quietness,
yes.
And doing things in a way that's safe and healthy for you too. I would like to see more. I'd like to see more changes. I think we all would. But thank you to yourselves and to Nolene and Jessica for highlighting this issue. It's deeply important.
Thank you, Hazel, for joining us today and for all the work that you've been doing in this area. That was Hazel Behan, activist and sexual assault survivor, Nolene Blackwell, lawyer and victims' rights activist, and our own Jessica Woodlock from News Talk. Thank you very much for joining us. Now, if you've been affected by anything in this discussion, you can contact the Rape Crisis Network's 24/7 helpline at 1-800-778-888.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.